Your style is unorthodox, but effective. It is not the art, but the combat that you enjoy.
Man, you come right out of a comic book.
You are now listening to Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat.
We are live on Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat. We are live on Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat. Black Comics Chat.
Shannon, CG, Lauren, and Mel form the Nerds of Prey, a group of ladies bonded by comics, gaming, film, television, and fandom culture. Hang out with them bi-weekly as they dig into the very things that make them loud and proud nerds. Available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. Also, check out their Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsofprey.
Hi, this is Anthony Rutgazer. I'm the writer of The First Hero and Heroes of Homeroom C, and you are listening to Black Comics Chat.
1-2-1-2. Hey, hey, what is happening, people? What is good? What's popping? What's cracking? This is Marcus Kwame, and we are back with Black Comics Chat. You know, we got, as always, we've got a very special guest in the house, and, you know, I'm here with holding it down with the two-man crew for now, and Leo should be coming through. And definitely shout out to Grace. She's busy tonight, so she won't be with us, but she'll be back very soon. But yeah, so first up with the Black Comics Chat team, we got holding it down, you know, author, dad, and crime fighter. We got my man T Legit, the loneliest legend in the house.
And now gainfully employed, you know, we don't want that.
That's right.
Yeah. W-2s is for real. Black Comic Chat, I know I say this like almost every week, but I am excited tonight. We about to get into it with my dude, man. I mean, this joint is like off the chain. We talking mysticism, we talking American history, we talking African-American history, we talking contemporary heroes, man. And he makes it all together, and it's like a gumbo. So, you know, we about to get into it, man. I'm excited. Let's do this.
Yeah, most definitely. And like I mentioned, Leo is on his way. He should be joining us in a little bit. But right now, we got the man of the hour is here. We got Ed Williams, one of the founders of ArcLight Comics. How are you doing tonight?
I am blessed. I'm so excited to be here with y'all tonight.
Me too. I wasn't lying when I said that. I want to get into this joint, man, for real. Let's skip the intros. All right.
So wait, Thelonious. I got to ask you. I mean, like, are you usually excited when you say you're excited?
We on camera, right?
Oh man, that's all right. Thelonious is joking.
Yeah, let's take that off. Sorry. Right. But no, I'm excited. So
that's right. Thelonious is perpetually excited.
I'm about to go do some push-ups.
Yeah. Most definitely. So Ed, we always start off every episode, being that we're speaking about comics, we like to speak about origin stories. So before we get into ArcLight's origin story, can you tell us a little bit about yours? You know, just like who you are and you know, when you got introduced to the medium of comics as a reader and as a creator.
Sure. Yeah. So they both said I'm Ed Williams, and by trade, by career, if you want to call it that, I am a brand designer and brand strategist. I've been doing that for about, it'll be close to 11 years now, actually.
What is that? What does that entail?
That entails, so I go in and I always try to put this in simple terms, but I feel like I never can. But what it is I go in, I work with entrepreneurs. So if most recently, one of my clients, she does MacBook cases. So we built, or rather I built a logo. I built the color palette, the brand fonts, how the brand speaks, how it acts in the marketplace, different product and copy lockups, social media presence and things like that. I pretty much take your brand and give it arms and legs so it can actually do a lot more.
So can you tweet out your links in case somebody in the audience needs those services?
Yeah, it's you can go to geekydreamer.com, G as in Greg, E-E-K-Y, dreamer.com.
Dude, for the record, I've been drinking. I'm not even going to try to spell that. So, but if anybody in the audience, man, we're gonna try to tweet that out at a later date.
Yeah, no, we will absolutely make sure everybody knows. Yeah, and it's going to be in the show notes.
I mean, because this is not the entrepreneurs on Twitter, and they, you know, branding is something, you know, everybody can use, and they might as well use somebody right. on Black Comics Chat. So, follow my man. You know, we're going to tweet that information out. Get at him after the show.
Awesome.
Okay, cool. Yep, I got the link right now. So anyway, so Ed, that's obviously, I'm sure we'll get more into that when you start speaking about Arclight, but I'm sure that those skills are extremely instrumental in getting your brand off the ground.
Absolutely. Absolutely critical. But as far as getting into comics, my first memorable experience with comics was actually the Milestone Comics, because that was, for those of you who are familiar with my story on Twitter, that was the first time I seen Black people on the cover of a comic book. And I was not sure what was going on.
On the cover.
Right. Just kind of like, you know, in a daze, what is this? What's going on here? And my cousin and I, Will, we actually bought, it was two huge stacks. It was one stack was Static and the other stack was Icon. And we read those stacks from about June to August, flipped through them, drew our own stuff. So that was like my most memorable entry point into comic books. But prior to that, I was an X-Men fan all day, every day. You know, that was like my gateway drug into the genre as a whole. From the TV animated TV show back in 92?
Did you ever read X-Force?
No, never got into X-Force. I may have read a couple comics here and there, but I was, you know, mainly just X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold, Extreme X-Men, X-Men, not Evolution, the Ultimate X-Men, pretty much all that right there. And that was about, yeah, that was about
I feel,
it. That
I
was
feel
X-Men
a draft. Junkie. Did somebody come? Oh, never mind.
For anyone not watching, that was a little shade. From Thelonious, I'm sure that we'll elaborate on it. I have a feeling that this episode is going to be Thelonious's Lit Part 2, but we'll see. First, we gotta let Ed get through his origin before you get all the way turned.
So Milestone pretty much was it for me. And that really got me going into writing, drawing, and kind of, I guess you can say, seeing the footprints in the sand of what was possible for me as a young Black writer and artist. And that just really just opened up the doors tremendously. You know, X-Men got me in there, but Milestone just pretty much kicked the entire wall down for me as far as the genre is concerned. Yeah. And then, of course, DC.
I love that quote. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I love that quote. I can relate to it. That's all.
Oh, yeah, awesome. And of course, DC Justice League was always on my top list. I love Justice League. And
I never got into DC, man. I was into a couple Flash joints, man. And so they always had the kind of the square-jawed alpha male, heroes,
Gods Among Men.
Yeah. And they didn't really have the flaw, Tony Stark was an alcoholic back in the 80s.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Spider-Man was a nerd. You know what I mean? And so unless you're the captain of the football team, unless you're the quarterback, I don't know why you're reading DC. Okay, maybe I shouldn't say that shade.
Yeah, there was a little bit more to it. But everybody had their side in the DC versus Marvel. Right.
I like Timberwolf. And he was like a fringe character. Cass is probably Googling him right now. Timberwolf. Exactly. That's my point.
No idea.
So what were we talking about? I told you, man. So Ed, you were saying that, in addition to, X-Men and Milestone, that you also, got into DC and the Justice League, you were saying.
Right. And I think that's where my appreciation for both of them comes in. Because, as Thelonious said, the Marvel was the human books, the flawed books. And then you had that Gods Among Men, that's iconic, memorable, gargantuans of, you know, they kind of carved out their own niche, like their own pantheon. And it was just really dope to me. And just kind of getting the flavor of both. I just appreciated both growing up. And I actually still do now, which is kind of disheartening considering, you know, the way the DC film universe is going right now.
we can definitely speak about that later. But
okay. But yeah, so yeah, that I mean, that's pretty much my lane, you know, X-Men, Justice League, and of course, Milestone. Yeah.
What about, you ever read any independent joints like Malibu?
No. I'm trying to think on it now. I'm pretty sure that I have. I just can't remember the title names.
Yo, did we have this talk about how Malibu had like a comic that was done by a child molester?
Mm. Oh, then let's get off topic.
Right.
Yeah,
I know. No, like, Thelonious.
It's not, not a good week to talk about that, man.
No, I know. Well, no, it's almost like more relevant because, like, you know, I don't know if he was like a confirmed chomo or he just had like some pedo shit. The guy who did the comic, you know, with the strong guy, the big strong guy. Oh my
god, that's DC's Prime.
The guy who did the comic Prime. It was about, and the messed up, fucked up thing is that
I thought Prime was Image.
No, Prime was Malibu. And the thing is that what's messed up is that the whole comic is about this kid who can turn into like this big muscle guy and then like do all this muscle guy shit. And it was like done by this guy who apparently later on was like found with like pedo stuff in his hard drives.
Oh, no.
And it's like, are you serious? No, you're going to ruin my childhood that way? And I just ruined everybody's childhood who listened to this thing. Yo, what's up? It's Leo from Black
Comics. By the way, that's Leo. Yeah.
Yeah. Leo just jumped into the show.
What's going on? What's up, man?
Leo's dropping facts before the introduction.
I thought it was live, Marcus. What's going on? What type of savage movie are we running here?
Oh, man. Yo. Oh, man. I'm sorry. I had the Chomo update real quick. This is a bad week for it. You're absolutely right, Thelonious. Not wrong.
Yeah.
Not wrong on that. Not wrong on that.
All right. But, okay, go ahead. No, I was saying, Ed, so you definitely fill us in on some of your, you know, origins as far as, you know, reading. Was there anything you read in particular when you thought, like, oh, this is something that, like, I could do?
The Milestone books. That's like the point of origin. Yeah. And then everything goes back to those Milestone books. Because, you know, I would read the X-Men books and I could relate. Right. I talked about briefly on Twitter how, you know, Beast, Hank McCoy was one of my favorite X-Men. Because, you know, he was big. I was big. And he was blue. He couldn't change the color of his, you know, fur skin. And I was black and I couldn't change the color of my skin. And, you know, he was shunned and I felt shunned at times. So we had that personal relationship. Hank and myself, but it never kind of, I mean, I was able to kind of process things through. Never really got the feeling that, hey, you know, maybe I can create my own. And I would like dabble, I would create my own superheroes, but never something like an entire universe. And then those Milestone books we stumbled across, like I said, that just opened up the doors.
Did you have a favorite Milestone character?
I love
them. I mean, it's old catalog. I liked. So I was always a fan of Blood Syndicate. I was always a fan of Wise Son, and you know, those got DMZ. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Those are probably two of my favorites.
I feel like we've done favorite Milestone characters.
Oh yeah, we've definitely.
I'm Hardware number one with Blood Syndicate.
I enjoyed Hardware myself. Yeah,
Hardware I thought was just like Hardware like blew my mind when I first read it. I was like, I've never read anything.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Hardware.
And you had had. Yeah, and Dennis Cowan on art, so yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and it had that, and like...
That's always a win.
Who did we talk to? I feel like we talked to somebody else in Black Comic Shop, this whole thing about just like that Milestone had that paper.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think we talked to Mildred Lewis, right? Wasn't she the one? Because she was a colorist of Milestone.
No, it was... not Mildred. It was Michelin. Oh, no. Michelin Hess.
Michelin Hess, I'm sorry. Yeah, other M-name awesome woman artist.
Yeah, yeah, you're close.
Yeah, she was talking about like that paper was like a certain thing. And like the Milestone paper in the books, it just absorbed the ink in a certain way that was like really dark and smoky. And it was like...
No, it was.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I was a static guy. Actually, I loved all the...
I was a static guy,
too. All of them. The three original launch titles, what was it? Like Blood Syndicate, Hardware, and Icon, and Static. Oh, four, actually.
Yeah. So to be Static was kind of a almost a re-imaging of Spider-Man, like almost like a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had almost seen that. I don't think there was anything, and Hardware was almost like a Iron Man, you know, to be honest. I don't think it was anything like a Blood Syndicate. I don't think there's any comparison, right, to what happened that. So I was a big Blood Syndicate fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing for me, and obviously those parallels are definitely there with those two characters, but I feel like, you know, they managed to breathe a whole new life into the characters, you know, so it definitely was far from derivative.
Oh yeah, I think Leo would tell you there's only like only seven stories ever written, and everything's just, you know, a recycle of that. And then if you talk to like a English professor, he'll say there's only two. So yeah, so a lot of stuff.
I've actually always thought that was bullshit. I hate that. I hate that. That's me personally. Leo, I get into a fight Leo with a friend about
you, this. Leo won't tell you, but I will. He's heard it. He's an English major.
I've heard it. I've definitely heard it.
He's heard it. So, but I'm saying everything is a reiteration, a rehash, man. So it's just, but how well can you do it? Mm-hmm. So I thought Milestone did it extremely well.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. All right. So, you know, Milestone obviously lit the fire for you. So let's talk about the moment when, you know, Arclight really started to take shape for you.
Yeah, sure. So we actually started out as a guild in DC Universe Online, the MMORPG. I think it's still around. I think it's still up and going. And we were called the Peacekeepers. And the original goal...
It is still going, but I'm just interrupting because I talked to someone the other day. I didn't know it was still going. And they're like, no, it's still happening. They still play.
Really?
I'm like, wow, really? Yeah, apparently it's still... DC Universe Online is still a thing.
Yeah. So we did that, and the original goal was to create original characters that would be on par with the iconic characters you would find in the course of DC Universe. And we did that very well. I mean, we had action figures. We had, we were a pretty huge staple during the pre-beta and the beta days of DC Universe Online. And then from that, we were like, hey, look, why don't we try to make a comic? And that didn't work out at all. Too many cooks in the kitchen. And that actually made us branch off into what we called Paradigm Studios. And it was eight of us. And that turned out to be a mess as well. Again, another story of too many cooks in the kitchen. And then I dismantled that. And I brought three others with me. And we started Arclight on December 13th, 2011. And we've been rolling ever since.
Yeah, cool. And on your site, you know, arclightcomics.com, which I definitely recommend people check out, you mentioned the whole transmedia approach to Arclight, and you know, that you have some big plans moving down the line. So I know you don't want to give it all away, but can you you know, tell the people a little bit about what you have cooking with Arclight?
Sure. I think it's really important to understand the type of business that you're in when you start something like this, because it's really easy to kind of go in there and say, I'm going to create a comic book. And that's, you know, that's well and good. A lot of people do that. But it's a different way of putting things when you go from creating a comic book to creating an intellectual property. And that's what people are buying. People aren't buying comic books. You know, I mean, comic books are just a medium. It's a vehicle to put the IP in and drive it. But these huge companies, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, all these other folks are buying up intellectual properties. I mean, that's what's hot right now. Everybody wants that, the next greatest Marvel Cinematic Universe. And that's what we've been building over the last coming up on 7 years here, is that intellectual property. And in building that, it's taken all this time up until now to put all those pieces together, the infrastructure, as I like to call it, and just meticulously and carefully planning and building and creating and making sure things intersect the way that they're supposed to be intersecting. I mean, this is definitely the culmination of just a lot of late hours, a lot of early mornings to create something that can span animation, live action, TV, cinema, video games, whatever the case is. And we spent a lot of time putting all the right pieces together. And by those, I mean, talking about branding, storytelling, world building, and so forth. So that's pretty much what we mean when we talk about transmedia.
Cool, cool. So let's, you know, one thing that I love, and I definitely feel like it's your whole approach to, you know, as a person who promotes online and does all the work you do, the way that your site is set up when people go to ArcLightComics.com, it's very, it lends itself to new readers. And you have some cool mini comics on there. Can you talk a little bit about that and how, you know, that approach came about?
Yeah, the many issues came about when I figured out I didn't have enough money to produce the full issue. So, you know, just kind of left to our own devices there. And I was like, well, we don't have thousands of dollars to put out like a 20-some page issue. So why don't we just do like one page and have the one page just be the complete story, beginning, middle, and end. And what that turned into was figuring out rather validating what we had. We needed to figure out, is this something that people actually wanted to see? And would people actually gravitate to these characters and appreciate them the way that we appreciate them and their stories? And that's how we got rolling with those. And the first one was, of course, the Bolt one, Enough is Enough, talking about Black Lives Matter and police brutality. And that's what really got the ball rolling for us. I mean, that was really well received. And since that point forward, we've just been putting those out there for a very free and low cost of entry point into the brand, into the bigger universe at large. So there isn't any barriers between us and the consumer. You know, here's 9 comics for free. See if you like us from these 9 comics. If you do, here's a full issue. If you don't, thank you for trying us out. You know, we'll meet up some other time. But, you know, that was the intent behind those.
Yeah, and definitely I recommend that everyone check it out because it's a nice jumping in point, which in general with comics can be very challenging because, you know, a lot of that when you speak to people about books, a lot of times that's the one hurdle that a lot of people have trouble getting past is like, you know, there's so much mythology and, you know, they don't know where to start. But, you know, this is a nice, concise jumping on point. It's free, which you can't beat.
You know, and my favorite price.
Yep. And the art and the storytelling is dope. And so, yeah. And actually, one thing I really dig is in just these brief comics, you managed to touch on, you know, quite a few issues. Like you mentioned, Black Lives Matter, the whole crazed mob scene of the, you know, the Trump effect in America. And, right. Yeah, and also even just like social media and the way that it you know affects the way that people interact with each other or even provides a voice for people who don't necessarily know how to interact face to face. So yeah, can you speak a little bit about that, about the way that you've woven social issues into the stories?
Yeah, that was always our intent, like from the jump. Like when we started out ArcLight, we said, you know, the number one question was, how do we differentiate ourselves from everybody else? You know, what is our thing? And we came to the conclusion that we really wanted ArcLight to be able to inspire people, to transform people, to heal people, to get us to have conversations that we're not having, to get people to see different sides of an issue that they weren't seeing before, kind of like the outside looking in perspective. And if we can get people talking about things that are really going on in this country and globally, if we can get people just to sit down and actually kind of understand each other through comic books, through stories and these characters, then we're doing our job. And in order to do that, you have to incorporate the world around us. You know, you can't ignore that. It can't be so fantastical that none of that can take place. And it can't be so socially and politically driven that people tune out, because there is a point of escapism people, you know, need and want when they go down to read a comic book. And it was finding that balance between the two for us, and that testing ground for us was the mini issues. And we found that some of those, I think the Braxton issue with the mini issue number 2 with the Trump, that was we actually coined that in-house our worst mini issue, because we went too far to the left on the politics and the social issues.
You can go too far to the left.
Huh?
I would say this is one point where I disagree. I don't, I mean,
really?
And, yeah, I, you know,
well,
I just say, you see Oprah sitting down with people that don't like black people or whatever, like she's going to say something, be like, wow, I never thought about it like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and so people's politics are what they are. I don't think a comic book is going to really change their mind. I think people that are open to it, I think there's a segment of populace that are open to it that might be, you know, tearing one way or the other, that might be able to see things a different way. But I think for the most part, people that already, you know, are feeling one way or another, you provide better arguments or let them see things in a different light. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a poll today that said the majority of Donald Trump's, you know, people that like him or agree with him agree that what's the guy, Weinberg, was guilty of what he did, but they don't think Donald Trump was.
You mean Weinstein?
Weinstein.
Well, you just
Weinstein.
Take any Jew. Any Jew you got, just like, you know, whatever, they probably fuck with some women.
The Hollywood dude that, you know, that was wrecking, that was acting like he was Roman Caesar, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, yeah. But anyway, so my point is, they believe that he's guilty. They don't believe Trump is, right? They think mm-hmm. the media is lying on Trump or telling the truth about him. So mm-hmm. I don't think any amount of facts or data is going to change their mind. And so I think Katz is, you know, with all due respect, I think Katz is, you know, kind of setting himself short, but trying to get a audience that's never going to be there for you. I think you got to dance with who brought you.
So, all right. So, I mean, like Thelonious and Leo, I personally did not think that particular issue went too far to the left. I'm just curious.
I didn't think it was left at all. I'm a tree-hugging progressive, though.
Same here, Thelonious. I hear you. But my question for Ed was more like, you know, what was the experience? And, like, I guess, what was the conversation in-house that brought you to that point? Because I agree. I personally,
the numbers.
You know, number one, don't think that it was too far. And I also, you know, found it relatable. But like Thelonious, I'm also a pink old commie lib. So, you know.
we actually tracked all of our downloads from, we actually have like over 4,000 downloads on these things. And a lot of the decline happens at that issue. You know, everybody tries out the first issue. And I mean, that's like our most popular issue. And then we lose a ton of people at that number two issue, and it picks back up after, you know.
Oh, I haven't read number two, so I'm ill-advised. I'm uninformed. Wouldn't be the first time.
Number two is the mini issue number two with Braxton and the Trump thing. Yeah. So that's kind of what helps us gauge, you know, what's being well received and what.
I mean, because it is a business. I mean, all intents and purposes, it is a business.
Right.
I want to be sensitive to that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel that. I think that the interesting thing is, you know, the average alt-writer is not necessarily going to be checking for a book that's got, like, you know, multiple brown people in it either way.
Oh, no, we're not worried about those people at all.
right.
No, it's not a, no. Because, you know, even though people, you know, I think we cater to a large group of people who are to the left. Mm-hmm. But just because you're on the left doesn't necessarily mean you agree with everything. You know, right. you still may hold some more conservative views or whatever the case is.
And Leo's a perfect example. We don't agree.
No, it's interesting what you're saying, because I think you're actually cutting to the heart of a thing that, like, I'm super undecided on, especially lately, and it's caused me to, like, do a lot less social media stuff, in all honesty, is that you get to this point where, like, you're talking about, like, being, like, a pinko tree hugger or whatever. I'm talking about, like, I've always been of the belief that having a conversation can change your life. Like, mm-hmm. I've had conversations that have changed my paradigm where mm-hmm. I've been like, oh, I've never thought about this like that. And, like, right. I still have conversations like that, and I'm in my late 30s. And so that's not something that happened when I was young. It's something that happens throughout my life. And sometimes I think I delude myself, perhaps, into thinking that everybody feels that way. Mm-hmm. So everybody has that kind of openness.
I will say this. I will say this. I think, I mean, I look at facts. I mean, I look at data, man. You know, I'm you know, I I deal with analytics in my day.
No, but how come you look at data, but I had to help you get back into the Google Hangout? That's what I want to know. What's the crossover?
Round one. Fight.
I mean, because we could do that. You know,
Leo, I'm sorry, Thelonious. I'm messing.
I'm saying, well, we talking smack. Let me pour me another shot, and then we can get into that.
Oh no, another shot.
I'm sorry, Thelonious. I'm sorry.
Hashtag Thelonious is lit.
See, I said, and we got guests over. We got Ed.
I'm showing off in front of company.
Exactly. You got to sit on the table. Be like, you want a beer too? I mean, you drinking out the milk jug. I mean, come
I'm
on.
I'm sorry. Dude. Don't let me cut off your point, Thelonious. What was your point? I'm sorry.
No, so I was. I mean, so you look at it. So you look at Kentucky, one of the reddest states in the nation. They voted for a governor that's going to take away their health care. They have one of the highest opiate crisis. Yep. And so when they are voting against not only their own life, the lives of their children for an ideology that is to serve the 1%. And so when you're say, you know, a conversation can change somebody's life, I was like, yes, I agree. Depend on who you're talking to.
Well, wait. I let Leo finish his thought because I don't necessarily.
Leo is making no sense.
No, hold on. I was kind of getting to what you're saying. Like, I'm getting to that right. thing that like I'm struggling with now.
I think I have an example for y'all.
Sure.
I don't know if anybody here watches Scandal.
I don't.
First, three seasons.
Okay. So I forget what season it was, but she had this. Shauna Richter wrote this season on, of course, Black Lives Matter and police brutality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prior to that, you know, I'm ride or die Black Lives Matter, you know, this, that, and the other. And there was a scene in there that came from the perspective of the police that I would have never considered, but it hit me in a place that I needed to be hidden. I was really open to what this man was saying in that scene. And it got me to understand the perspective of police officers from that one episode. So I have significantly toned down my approach and softened my heart a little bit when it comes to the Black Lives Matter and the police issues based off of that one episode.
And I would say kudos to you. Uh-huh. And I think that the fact that you're in a creative space and you have to be open to different stimuli, different experiences. So I think you're more likely to change than somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I'm not changing my mind.
All right. So two things, Lois. I mean, like, number one, you reference that you deal in facts. And I think, you know, most.
I programming IT. So there's
right.
I mean, the human element is you know, you just don't look at numbers. So what Kentucky did was stupid.
Absolutely.
Kentucky signed they
right. Like those people, I'm sure saw tweets, had conversations, heard the information, and then voted otherwise.
Right.
And they're like, oh, we're fucked now. What the hell? Like, and it's like, okay, like your opportunities to change your life based on the conversation were right in front of you.
But here's the thing: are they going to vote different next time?
So all right. Well, you
no,
know
they're not. Mm.
Right, but that comes down to the fact that critical thinking is not a thing that is taught or championed, and it's actually opposed in a lot of
especially.
You know.
Can we just say they racist?
No, I mean 100%, man. Like, you don't have to ask.
We talking around. There's an elephant in the room. Right?
There ain't no elephant to me. No,
the Civil War was fought on a couple of specific details. There was some shit in there about, like, the North wanted to charge this much.
Hashtag states' rights deal.
It's a nuanced issue. It's a very nuanced issue, the Civil War. I don't know if y'all are familiar with it. I personally have a degree from college. Yeah,
you can find out more on my website, www.staterights.com.
No, I'm just saying. That's I mean, you know, dog, listen, no, I mean, we got,
no,
we got,
I know,
we got
man.
Cat, this guy ain't coming over no more because of Leo. I'm totally agree with you.
Like,
cut Thelonious off, man.
Your last point specifically, are people gonna vote like that again? Like, even with like literally their kids having their health insurance stolen from them?
And yes, they will.
Probably yes.
They will.
Mm-hmm.
That's the That's the disturbing part. Now, I almost feel like, I mean, part of what Ed is talking about, though, is about exploring that nuanced space, perhaps right. for creative reasons, which I don't necessarily have a problem with. It's not like I need all my fictional content to, I don't know, adhere to some kind of revolutionary ideal. It doesn't necessarily have to. Mm-hmm. I like it when it does, personally, usually. But like at the same time, I think that as a creative, it's interesting to kind of be in the space where you're seeing the reaction to that creative choice mm-hmm. and then choosing to shift it. Right. Now, like, but and Ed, you're saying that you've done this, like, you did this deliberately and based on what you saw as new information.
We kind of, it was in the moment. We had a script for it. That event happened, and I wanted to bring some attention to it, to talk about it. And it ended up being the wrong choice. It really just showed us to not, just to nuance it just a little bit. Like, don't be so on the nose.
Cussing up under his breath. He's like, what the hell is type of podcast is this?
No, because it sounds kind of like ours.
I'm going to go ahead and let you finish, Ed. Go ahead, bro.
Nah, if y'all were in like inside of our internal meetings, it pretty much sounded like this. But yeah, so it's just nuancing how we do it. Like, it doesn't have to be so on the nose, you know, just finding different ways. And it's not all the time, you know. We don't want to talk about social issues and political issues all the time.
So you just want to make it highbrow so it goes over the redneck's head?
No. What I want to do is,
I'm putting words in your mouth. This sounds like what you said.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Nope. It's not being so just gut punching with it.
So you want to read that? I thought we talked about that.
No, right? No. It's more so like the first issue.
Okay. The first issue was, I haven't read the other issue. The first issue was dope, dude. It's probably one of my favorite independent joints, man. And I don't know how far we don't get into that. I know Leo kind of sidetracked the conversation.
Yeah, no, I love how Thelonious is coming in.
And he keeps accusing him. Yo, Leo's sitting here listening quietly. So he's
like, Leo, with your interrupting ass.
Like, Leo, stop talking so much. No. I personally, in most things, I do appreciate nuanced takes on things. And like, I don't think like, I mean, even in specifically like, you know, speaking to like the first issue, did you sense any kind of response to that shifted approach? I think is what I was getting at in my original question, Ed.
Yeah, there was definitely a different feedback and reaction from the first one to the second one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty. It was almost night and day. You know, it was like, okay,
really?
We can't go that far no more. And it's not so much. It was. I really think when you look at the first issue, the first mini issue of the Bolt, the conversation is different. The tone is different. It isn't as gut punching. Whereas that second issue, we're just hitting you right in the gut with it. You know, it's right on the nose. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So we kind of took that and reconfigured some things, and you can actually see the reconfiguration in the approach of issue zero, the passing, you know, just trying to understand how do we have these conversations without being biased or without being, because, you know, we all kind of sit on the left. I think all of us are on the left.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of us are in the middle, you know, independence or whatever, but We try to, as creators, see the problem or the issue holistically. You know, I may have my views on Black Lives Matter, but I think, and this kind of speaks to the type of people that I bring in, who I hire. I'm of course I'm Black, but I have three other guys who are also Black, and I have two white guys, and I believe Spencer is like this mix of Polynesian, white, Native American. He's a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And
what does he identify as? I mean,
I don't even know. I've never asked that question. That's a good question to ask. Maybe he'll shoot me a message in Slack and let me know. But when we create these stories, it's never just coming from one person's perspective. We actually create stories collaboratively. We'll all get together in Skype or whatever the case is, and we'll sit down and say, okay, what do we want to talk about? Like, what is the issue for the many issues? And we'll pitch ideas around, and we'll kind of get down to the heart of what we want to talk about and then build it out from there. And as we're building out, we get the opportunity to understand how everybody views that issue around the table. And that's another important thing that, you know, we set up from the jump was I wanted to create not only a diversified cast as far as our characters were concerned, but on the inside, as Arclight was concerned, I wanted everybody from all walks of life. I feel like that's the only way to do it. And Line Forge is a fantastic example of what that looks like. I think they're like the only ones in the industry, to be quite honest, doing something like that, where you have diverse perspectives, you have different cultures, ethnicities, races, gender, sexualities coming to the table and creating something that's just multicultural, and it feels right. You know, there's a different feel to the Catalyst Prime books. It almost reminds me of the feeling that I got from the Milestone books, that authentic, genuine representation and diversity and storytelling.
Yep.
That is honest and true to who and what those characters are versus Superman's now gay, and you know, this is that and the other, and he's wearing pink now, and it's, you know, it's a different type of approach than what we get from Marvel and DC.
Is that a new Superman story arc?
No, it's not. But don't be surprised.
I'll be a collector's edition.
I'll mess with it. Like
with the multiverse, I think there is, that's true on one universe at least.
Really?
So. No, there definitely is a 2-2 Superman somewhere.
Yeah. Absolutely. No,
interesting.
But your point is to sum it up. I mean, what are you getting? What's your point?
My point is that you know, it's never, we really try to understand the issue, the political issue, whatever.
So I think my question is, was it too left because it wasn't another POV on? I mean, because you could have a character or protagonist that's left.
So wait.
And I guess that the it's unbalanced if you don't have a counterweight in that comic that's challenged him.
So you know, right, we look for whatever, the challenge,
right?
Exactly what he said. Yeah, we look for the challenge. We just kind of look if there is I think maybe if we kind of spent more time on it, that was a rushed issue too. We were way behind on schedule, so it was kind of like get it out the door immediately. But if we had spent some more time trying to look at all sides of the thematic argument there, I think we would have found some balance in that issue.
And right. Came out on the left.
If I could, just for a second, we have some good questions from the audience. One of them actually speaks to to what I think you're saying, Ed. Arcade Noise asks, do you guys think that there's a pressure for creators of color to make their work more political/revolutionary in tone? And it's like that's not specifically at you. It's kind of like,
no, that puts the finger so on it though.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because it's almost like a litmus test, right?
Where, yeah, there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of like purity with that, where comics, like what are you talking about in your comics?
Right.
If you don't show the correct amount of outrage, then you know, I don't want to use the word sellout or whatever, but so I mean, it's a charged area, man, and people are choosing sides and they want to know which side are you on. And if your art doesn't depict which side you're on, and then it opens you up to I would say inaccurate or off the cuff, you know, like that black, I don't want to say black on black crime. Right? I don't want to say a lot of stuff that I'm saying. But I'm saying it's a charged environment, and it's not fair to I think a lot of people in the creative space that just want to make the art that
no, I haven't heard that phrase in like
what's that the
phrase you just said, which I will not bear repeat.
Well, you know where I've heard it. I've heard it when people are trying to shut down, you know, valid arguments on behalf of black people. I've heard it as a derailing tactic. You know, like, for real. That's why it's a point.
It's kind of chestnutty right now, though. Like, I haven't even heard that. Right now, they'll just call people the N-word. They're kind of beyond that. But
Right. Like, it's almost like Trump's America, yeah.
Yeah, this is a different right now. But, like, I just feel like I haven't heard that. that particular term in so long. And I but I like regarding Arcade Noise's question, like I think I personally would say yes, there is that expectation. I think that expectation is impossible to avoid. Like, it's going to be there. And I think that I what I don't like is sometimes I feel like I see a backlash where people want to pointedly not represent that or not ask those questions or those conflicts because they're like, I don't want to make my book about that. Right. And personally, I think the most satisfying stories that come as a result of this completely fucked world that we live in right now, specifically country, are the people who are doing that in a subtle enough way that it's not necessarily like the end all be all or the point of the story. It is simply part of the texture of it because it's almost ignorant to completely avoid it. Like, I don't know, they're black characters and live in a neighborhood and no one ever bothers them and the police love them. They're great and everything's awesome because it's like the world we want to live in. It's like, that feels pointedly synthetic.
Because it is.
It is. Right.
It's very,
that was written by Judd Apatow.
Yeah, we actually, John Henry in issue zero actually says that. He says, I can't be bothered with what's going on in the universe when down here we're so much, you know, under attack that my concerns are down here with us while we're being killed, while we're being hung, while we're being dragged through the streets. I can't be bothered with whatever alien forces are out there. And I always thought that was, you know, I always thought that was honest from the perspective of a black superhero. You know, why would you be concerned?
It's very honest. It's very, and it rings true. And I want to come back to that point. Yeah. We have a question on Twitter, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce this person's name. but what are your stances on Ray spinning a white character to be black? I'm asking
you. What was that?
What are your stances on Ray spinning a white character to be black?
What are we talking about? Talking like Johnny Storm, where the race of the character doesn't matter. I mean, he can be race bent into Asian or whatever.
Well, you know, this is black comics. Yeah, race always matters.
Right.
I mean, that's just a question on Twitter, man. So
yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you have to kind of understand, does the race significantly, I mean, does the change in the race significantly alter the character? I mean, if you change Black Panther from African to white or Asian,
it's not Black Panther.
It's a completely different character. But if you're taking Johnny Storm and flipping that to, I don't know, Samoan, it is what it is. I mean, it's an archetype. He Johnny Storm is an archetypal character, whereas Black Panther, the mythos is built in him being an African.
So it depends on the identity of the character how they're identified as.
Correct. I mean, if you know, the superhero Whitey McWhiterson, who has white powers, if you turn that superhero black, like, I guess that would be kind of weird, but.
What's the name of the superhero again?
This is Whitey McWhiterson. He's a Malibu character. You probably haven't heard of
him. How many issues?
I have the zero issue. I got it bagged.
Yeah, no, you got the origins.
Yeah, I got it bagged.
I got the number half from Wizard. I had to send in proofs of purchase to get it.
So back to what Mr. Williams was saying about how his character, John Henry, about how, you know, you want me to save the world. I can't even save my neighborhood.
Right.
I was at a book thing with like Jason Reynolds, and he did a Miles Morales. He did a novel on Miles Morales, and the novel was dope. But he had he said something similar to what you said in that if you're a black parent and your kid has, you know, superhero powers, there was no way they were saving the world unless it was getting paid. You know, they better superhero that homework. They better superhero their bedroom, you know? And so, you know, when you're black and you live in a black space or a community or whatever, everything is neighborhood and family and community, and anything outside of that, when I grew up was not to be trusted. And so I thought, you know, Jason Reynolds, how he developed his novel and how he developed Miles Morales as a character and the superhero powers kind of ring true to how you was just talking about, you know, your John Henry arc and that piece of dialogue and how important it is, I guess, to his development.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you think centering that conflict is key? Don't you think like the part of John Henry that is in an internal conflict about that part of the resolution of that is that changing that small part is actually changing the big part? like changing your neighborhood does affect the world. Isn't that part of an idealism that we can interpret?
Yeah, I do believe he would actually go about that approach. John Henry is a very he's very idealistic, but grounded at the same time. And I think exactly what you said is exactly true to his character. You know, he believes that if I can save my people, you know, this is going to have a much larger effect, but I haven't been able to do that quite yet. And I haven't been able to do it in enough time to where I can save us before the universe starts attacking us. And these problems are still going on. And I think one of the key things about our characters are they are humans who happen to have superpowers, who happen to be superheroes. They aren't necessarily when we start out with this book one, it'll be out 2019. No superheroes actually exist in our world. We're actually coming from the perspective that what would actually happen to humanity if we did get superpowers? You know, what kind of world would we be living in? And we like to think that everybody will run off and be superheroes, but the truth is that we're human and we do human things. And if we can manage to cause global terrorism and serious acts of evil without powers, imagine what we'll do when we have them.
And imagine Donald Trump with superpowers.
Exactly. Like the snap of his finger and North Korea is out in seconds, you know? You'd have people sneezing and blowing up entire city blocks. And I mean, it'd just be complete chaos.
So
and
it would depend on who had the powers, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's what I was getting at. Right. You know, it's kind of like the world is now made of glass and the laws of science and physics and mathematics, you know, all these things that we are accustomed to are now rendered completely useless in this world of superpowered people that is inherently empowered by magic. And how do you fight fire with fire? And getting back to what you were just saying, you know, it takes a special kind of person to say, okay, I'm going to do right by this. I'm not going to use them to my advantage. I'm actually going to try to do the right thing by these gifts that I've been blessed with. And our story starts out with that person, as you see in issue zero, Artavius Cartwright, on his journey to becoming that person that the world needs and finding several other people along this way that actually help him in fulfilling that destiny. Because at that point, you know, we're pretty much helpless. I mean, you imagine if there is a sexual predator in the neighborhood and you thought you had issues before, now this man can walk through walls and it's like, where are the barriers at in this new society? You know, what happens when all of our technological advances, all of our sciences, all of our mathematics are rendered completely useless? Nothing works anymore because we don't have answers to magic. And what is this new stuff that we're dealing with? And we'll come to a point to where we're actually finding ourselves understanding, rebuilding, and trying to balance out the world between what was old and what's new now, and trying to find some common ground in there. And that whole time, it's really just the exploration of humanity and how we actually will react to getting superpowers.
Dude, I thought that was dope.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dude, I thought that was dope. And again, you know, Marcus, he mentioned like the art, and he's an artist, so he has an eye for that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the writing, the dialogue, I thought the monologue, I thought it was incredible. I thought the storytelling was incredible. You know, I'm excited for you. I'm excited about this comic.
Thank you.
So, you know, what's next, man? What's going on in the near future?
What's next is I'm actually, it is a goal to get book one, the first draft, finished by the end of this year. I've been grinding for these past couple of weeks, getting that together. And then 2018 is actual production of our first graphic novel. We're actually going to do graphic novels.
Are you going to the fan con?
Yeah, Universal Fan Con. We actually do plan on being there. Yep.
Okay. All right. So yep. We could.
Black Comics Chat is planning on being there as well. So
we're awesome. Are we going to have a panel? We're going to have a live show. One of our main guys, Tony, is going to host a panel, and so
Nice.
Like to get you there, man, if that's possible.
Yeah, man, that's definitely possible. Yeah, it's just you know, y'all got my contact information now. Just hit me up. So yeah, definitely going to Universal FanCon. Also thought about doing BlurCon as well. We did our first convention this year at Hero Nation, Ypsilanti. That was dope. I absolutely loved it. Audience public reaction was fantastic. I've never experienced something like that online. Like we get it online, but to get like see people's faces and see the kids like light up and run to the table, that was on a whole nother level. So I can't like wait to do that all over again. But yeah, so we're actually going to do graphic novels. We're not going to do floppy issues. I just think in this Netflix generation that we live in, everybody is a binger. Everybody likes to consume things on their own time. So yeah. Tuning into this new era of people, I think it's more efficient for us to actually release graphic novels than it is to do floppy issues. So you get the whole story. So it's actually going to be a volume of several books, and you'll be able to get that, collect that volume. And then that volume is the beginning of the Archetype universe. And then we'll move on to volume 2 and then volume 3 and so forth. So the first book of that is coming out in 2019, and we'll be doing a Kickstarter in 2018 to get the physical copy of issue 0 out to everybody. So, I mean, as y'all know, issue 0 is already done. Now we just need to get it to everybody. So the Kickstarter will be getting those physical copies. If you want one, the Kickstarter is a place to go to get one. And we'll be doing that in a couple months here. So we got a pretty jam-packed 2018. We're bringing the podcast back again. I talked to Marcus about that when we were off air. We used to have a podcast in 2016. Talking about the last 4 to 5 years of what it took to get up to this point with Arclight Comics. And we talked about marketing, branding, storytelling, character design, all types of stuff. And we'll be bringing that back in 2018. And we're actually going to have the whole team on. It's going to be like used to be just the two of us. And now it's going to be like the entire team on there. So it's going to be extra dope. So I'm excited about that. And I think that's about it. That's all I can remember right now.
You know, we were talking about doing a Black Comics podcast just about the business side of comics, right? I mean, you do branding. I think we had another cat that was doing business. And because of a lot of our followers, they actually, they're in the creative space, and whether they're writers or artists or whatever. And I think guys that are out there, you know, doing a thing, like you said, you remove the safety net. We have a couple other people that have been on the show that remove the safety net. I think you guys just spitting game of, you know, expectations, you know, branding and hustling or whatever. I think our followers would, you know, learn a lot from that. And I think it'd be beneficial. So
yeah, we'll definitely be broadcasting your links and all that when you guys get that going.
Yeah,
man, so, that's definitely important.
Yeah, we definitely gonna have to, because the business side is
crucial.
I mean, dude, you got the dopest comic. If don't nobody know about it, it don't matter.
Right. Well, exactly. to that end, as far as the business side, one question I had was, you know, being that the superhero market is saturated and currently dominated, or well, forever been dominated by DC and Marvel. What do you find are the advantages and disadvantages of approaching superheroes on an independent level?
I think disadvantages, time and money.
right. You know, it's the obvious.
Yeah, the obvious. I think the advantage is that. And I don't think I'm stepping out too far when I say this, is I think a lot of people are getting fatigued with DC and Marvel's BS. You know, the repeat of events, the killing of the characters, the bringing them back. There's a new event. It feels like every 6 months there's a new event, or they're starting the universe over again. And I mean, there's a lot of fatigue with that.
There's a lot of reboots.
Yeah, a lot of reboots, and you know, you're kind of exhausting people out. You're doing a disservice to the fans by changing these characters and flipping them here and flipping them there and doing those other craziness. And I think what's going on with independence right now is a lot of people are searching for new material because they're tired of that. They want new stuff. I think the films have been great at exposing superheroes at a global level. I think what's going on right now is amazing. But what happens is you have all this fandom, but all the fandom is attached to the films, not necessarily the books. And I think there's going to come a point to where, and it may not happen with, I may be stepping out too far, but, you know, maybe 5-10 years from now, but I do think there's going to be a moment where we're going to have superhero fatigue in the cinema space. And I think this is about as high as how high Marvel and DC can go. This is like the pinnacle for both of them. So if the comics can't get back right,
well, so I think it would depend because I think Black Panther is going to be hot.
Yeah, right. Just right.
And I think if they did Ms. Marvel, I think that would be hot.
Right. I think that's another 5, 10, maybe 15 years. I'm not necessarily sure. So, these waves are going to be pretty high.
If they did Shang-Chi, who was like, you know, the Kung Fu Master. I mean, so I think if they diversify, which, you know, is, you know, I don't want to say diversify. I mean, if they normalize and they realize there's other demographics that there's for heroes that they could identify with.
Cinema space, but as far as the book material, where all the source material is getting gathered from, right, that's still more or less the same. You know, I mean, we've made some advancements. I can't discredit that, but at the same time, it's like it's still kind of like what's going on. I mean, there's a whole lot that still feels generally the same in.
Oh yeah, the comic book space. Nighthawk. They canceled Nighthawk. Mm-hmm. I'll still keep talking about that. that's never a boring topic to me. Uh-huh.
You can talk about Marvel's version of Batman.
What?
That's Dark Hawk.
You're I don't think that's it.
Yeah, Thelonious. Nah, David Walker last year wrote
him. Okay, my
right,
bad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I think my point is that
you said they're going to cancel it because he was getting away with something. They was like, how are they letting you write this? That was like an exact quote from you.
Yeah, but they should have kept letting it.
Yeah, exactly.
But my point is, with the global exposure of superheroes, that opens the floodgates for interest. And I think for independents right now, that's where you can capture some of this audience for yourself. Through, you know, Facebook ads, targeting and things like that, Instagram. I mean, the time is now, and when Black Panther comes out, that's going to be a critical point for a lot of independents to actually get up there on their marketing game, because once we see this movie,
and we all got to go see
the gateway, right? That's going to open the gateway for Black Panther will actually be that pinnacle moment for a lot of independents to actually get into that space, because the interest is going to be high. So paying attention to these movies, you know, Captain Marvel. I don't know, maybe we'll get an Asian American or an Asian character, you know, get in Marvel or DC or whatever. But pay attention to these movies and ride those waves when they're high. I think that's a great point of entry, because people are going to be looking for the material after that. Because after they see the movie, then what's after that? They're going to wait for the next one. You know what I'm saying? So get in there. When the interest is high. Huh?
I'm curious about that point, because, like, for in the case of Black Panther, like, yo, there's a ton of shit about Black Panther. Like, it's not like someone's gonna watch Black Panther and then gonna be like, well, let me get comics. Oh, none exist. I guess I'll just find this other black superhero that someone published. It's like, no, there's a lot of back material. There's back matter,
right?
And they will get it,
right?
And they will love it, because most of it is great. A lot, mm-hmm. good portion of Black Panther's catalog is great. So, right. But do you think it is going to kind of supercharge superheroes of color just to kind of like be investigated?
I think it will expand the interest. So, yeah, you know, what else is out there other than this one black character that's going to go global? You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of have to. That's how I was when I at Milestone. I'm not saying everybody else is like me, but you know, I asked, well, what else is out there besides Milestone? I was hungry after I found Milestone, and I couldn't find it. So that's, here we go with Arclight. But when that movie comes out, I think that's really going to open up people's interest to look for more material. Of course, they're going to go and try to check out some Black Panther comics, like you said. The
Hollywood's a copycat. It's a copycat league, man. I mean, that's what Hollywood does.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but I do agree. I see what you're saying, Ed, because you know, Marvel has failed to capitalize on on the success of the films on the comic book level. And I think that, like, you know, the indies, the interesting thing is I've spoken a little bit about indie washing on the show, which is like where
you start seeing some Marvel books, some of the better Marvel books, to be honest. They basically, you know, grab some indie writers and artists, you know, and they kind of have somewhat of an indie tone, you know. Mm-hmm. So I feel like in a lot of ways, the indies do lead, at least as far as setting the example. But like, you know, books like the Arclight books and like Lion Forge, I think they effortlessly tell these stories, which is what you were referring to, you know, place where maybe a Marvel or DC is going to be like, all right, well, we'll just, you know, plop this color palette on top of this existing character. And I feel that more holistic approach of a Lion Forge or an Arclight is something that's going to connect more directly with, you know, readers or viewers who are interested in exploring Black comics.
Well, right. It's authentic, right? I mean, the writers, the artists, they care about the characters. They're not doing it as a marketing ploy. Mm-hmm. And I think the readers could see that.
Right, right. Go ahead, Leo.
No, it was something that you said earlier, Ed, that kind of got lost in the shuffle. This thing about like people dropping a book. And I guess I wanted to kind of open that to the Black Comic Chat audience and to people on the panel right now. What's your view? Like, if you're like collecting the Marvel book, let's say there's a new Marvel series or just like an old favorite. Mm-hmm. When do you stop? When are you like, that's enough? I can't, like, they did that, like, in this issue. I'm done. I'm not buying shit anymore. Like, what do you think? What do you think the kind of, you know, the barrier for that is? What do you think the standard is?
And I'm curious, because Leo was Nighthawk.
I mean, like, I would have kept buying. I mean, not really, but I think everybody, that's something we can all have. We've all run into a thing where we're like, I'm done with this book. That's it. Hands up. Like, over. Mm. So, but you mentioned that, Ed. What do you think is the cutoff for that?
I think for me, and my perspective of the industry and other industries and the ways the society is going right now, again, we are a binging society. This is a high time for binge material. And the way my attention span is set up, I wait for the trades. And I'm not
necessarily... You're Netflix style, like you were saying.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I wait, I want the whole story. I don't want to have to read 20 pages and then wait a whole other month for the next one to come out. That's not
and
how...
Then, and then reread it in order to make sure you got everything straight.
Exactly. And with the severe, like I was reading an article today talking about the marketing issues within the comic book industry right now, and it's a mess. And you know, a lot of publishers, there's just whole. I just think the marketing in the industry right now is just trash. There's not a whole big push. There's not a whole lot of strategy for marketing in the industry. So I mean, people forget. I mean, you're asking people to get this book this month and then stay on top of things until the next month. Whereas we live in a weekly cycle. You know, I mean, people know Scandal comes on Thursdays. How to Get Away with Murder comes on Thursdays. That we operate in weekly cycles. So when you're saying, hey, get this book in October, come back in November, there's a lot of time. There's a lot of events that have transpired between October and November. And people forget, you know? Whereas if you give me the whole story, right then and there, and I can consume it as I want to, whether read the whole thing in a day or dull it out over time. And if it's good enough, I want to sit around and wait for the next book. It's no different from Harry Potter or Twilight or The Hunger Games when they release those novels. They don't give you the whole story, but they give you a book within a continuum of books. And people wait for them. You know, they're good books. Mm-hmm. You wait a year or two for the next one to come out. And I feel like that's just the way society is going. And I think the comic book industry is behind on this because I just can't wait around for the monthly stuff. I got to get the
trade. There's not a story you wouldn't wait for. There's not a story where you're like, I need to know the next 20 pages of that right now.
No. No. And that's just me. You know, other people may be different, but me. No, I mean, even like with I don't watch even now, like when Walking Dead and all that stuff comes back on, I actually wait until the season is over and it gets on Netflix or some other program so I can binge watch the season because I hate waiting the next week to get it. Like that's how I'm rolling right now.
No, I hear that. And you know, I mean, it's definitely something like so for myself personally, I do prefer trades for similar reasons, but I definitely, you know, read quite a few monthly books in floppy form, just for the simple fact that there's this, you know, annoying kind of paradigm where essentially it's like, oh, if you want the book to survive, then you need to buy monthly copies. That's
right. Well, right. There's that as well.
That's a lot of pressure.
That's what I was getting to, because it's like I was, you know, speaking to Bob at my dude at the comic book shop about this, that, you know, it's really dated and it's really garbage because, number one, unless I have the type of influence where I can, you know, get 20,000 people to buy a book, I'm not personally saving a book by buying it on a monthly basis. Like, I bought Nighthawk monthly, Leo bought Nighthawk monthly, you know, but that wasn't enough to save the book. And so it's a weird blame game that's being played when, you know what I'm saying, when these companies are like, no, we're sticking with the floppies because that's how it's been, and you need to buy it if you want it to survive, when, you know, the average person, it's like, yes, if I buy a floppy, I buy a floppy, but that's not going to keep it alive in and of itself. So,
hey, we have a question from Fright Wing on Twitter. The question is,
that's his Halloween Twitter name?
Yeah,
man, I don't know. Okay, can I get to the question? All right, I'm sorry.
Church Pinch.
Let you know.
No,
go ahead. Hashtag Church Pinch.
So you on Twitter too, then, right? You see the question.
Is that a social media app?
Oh man,
a social media app. Yeah, you can download that joint.
Wait, is that like the MySpace?
You got an iPhone? You got a rotary dial? What you got?
No, all right, no, I'll find out.
What's the question, my brother?
I was about to ask a question, and he was right. Like, "That's not his real name."
Oh shoot!
My feelings is hurt. I don't want to talk no more.
Oh my God, is that all it takes? No, I'm playing. Thelonious, which specific question are you talking about?
I'm hanging up. The one that's on Twitter, dog. I mean,
the most recent thing Arcade was asked is, do you think that the big two need to really market, though? This is, again, something I feel like we're rehashing a lot of our old Nighthawk talk, and I don't want to go too, like, long into that because we really.
Also, Frightwing's question isn't important.
No, it's important. It's crucial. What his point of view, he's pontificating that when it comes to Marvel, or Big Two specifically, but like,
oh, he's pontificating. I thought it was a question, my bad.
So what he was saying was that he looks at marketing by the Big Two as being a matter of brand recognition in movies. And it's like, is it really about them, like, selling hardcore their individual books?
They actively want, they say this all the time, they want to tap into these new markets. Well, you can't tap into them if all you market to is the people who already know the books are existing. You have to actually put effort behind your marketing to get into those newer markets, you know? Exactly. So, yes, I mean, they're Spider-Man is huge, Batman is huge. But if all I know them from are TV shows and movies and video games, what do you want me to do? I don't know. And there's so much backlog, and there's such a big catalog, and there's always, I don't know, like 10, 15 books for Batman and Spider-Man on the shelves. But like, where do I start? Help me find out where I start. What do I need to do? What books are out right now? I'm interested in the character. I want to read more, but you guys aren't showing me the entry point to get there. And yeah, I mean, I don't care how big the brand is, that you still need to market, you know? So that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah.
No, I got you. Yeah.
You good, Thelonious? Do we need to have an intervention, my brother?
You
sounded a little sullen right there, man.
I told you I was going to be one of the nights.
He said that what Ed said he agreed with. He was like, damn it, yeah. Feel the same way.
He's like, you're right, dog. You're right.
I have nothing to offer after that. Yeah, I'm just, you know, yeah.
Okay. You got a lot to offer, Thelonious, man. No, come on, man. You were smart. he's important. Come on, man. Ed,
you make it sound like they give me wages in the locker room. I'm good.
I think it's interesting that all this talk about monthlies came up, like, specifically in course with what Ed is talking about in regards to their push, the Kickstarter, and a trade happening. Right. So it's almost like, I feel like, yeah, like, you're kind of answering this question already by your actions. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going for the, you want the graphic novel, you want the prestige format big book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's, I think it's just a better payoff for you and your audience. I think the point of entry, you know, just here's my 25 or 21 page, however many pages it is, comic. Wait around for another 2 years for me to produce the next one. We don't have the same systems and engines that Marvel and DC have as independents. Largely, we're working with our own capital out of our own wallets, you know, in our own time, which fluctuates, and it takes us longer to get these books out. So I'm saying, hey, if I can give you a whole graphic novel and then you can wait another year for the next one to drop, there we go. But the whole, you know, I think it's just a better investment for both your audience and you. The value just seems to be more than, and we may be wrong, I don't know, but we're willing to go out there and try it and take the risk and test it. You know, if we're wrong, we'll switch back and do what everybody else is doing. But since no one really seems to be doing this, I don't want to say no one, there's other people doing it. EXO, Roy Akupe, he releases graphic novels, phenomenal ones at that.
He does.
Yeah,
he's got all kinds of stuff. He's got cartoons working.
Yeah. He's got a great run of stuff going on. And I mean, you know, they're fantastic stories. And you get to not only consume them at your own rate, but you get to kind of, it's a lot of meat and potatoes there. It doesn't feel like you're sipping on broth, because when you're doing the floppies, you're kind of doling out a story over a set number of issues. Whereas the graphic novel, it's like, okay, I can think on some things that I've just read. Maybe I read 10 pages tonight or 20 pages tomorrow night or whatever the case is, but I get to sit here and enjoy the entree and not the appetizers over time, you know? And I think that's very important for an independent and when you have these newer audiences, because you may not always capture somebody in that first issue and your story may not actually be getting going until maybe issues two or three. And I think if you get somebody an entire graphic novel, that gives them an opportunity to figure out who you are, what your story is about, what your characters. It gives people more time to spend with what you created versus the monthlies.
Right.
So Ed, as an independent creator, was that the biggest issue you made, was to go with the graphic novel? And as far as from a branding standpoint, what are some of the issues you did that helped you, I guess, you know, leverage your expertise to compete? I mean, because there's a finite amount of readers, mm-hmm. And everybody's competing for, you know, or competing for eyes. So right. With your expertise, you know, as, you know, a brand marketer, what are some of the things you did that you leveraged to help you get a leg up on your competition?
Figuring out who and what we are. Because people are going to ask, you know, who are you? Why should I care? And why do you do rather?
So you're talking your elevator pitch.
Yeah. Mostly elevator. And the essence of your brand. Brands have souls. Brands are very human these days. They represent us. They represent ideologies. They represent belief systems and things like that. You know, our attachment to brands have evolved so much over time. They're not just these big marketing machines. They're actually, you actually feel something when you interact with the brand. And for us, it was really figuring out what that was, and how do we stake our claim and how do we say we are different without really, you know, forcing it, you know, just kind of be it, like be the brand, be who we are and be true to who we are. And people are gravitating to us because they identify us as somebody who does the social issue thing, but does it tastefully. And because we ran a survey back in 2016, and that was the feedback. You know, we're doing, somebody said, we're doing what Marvel and DC should have done 70-something years ago. You know, you're telling stories that connect with me, that I feel small in these situations when these events happen, but your stories make me feel like I'm powerful, like I have a voice or something. So people identify us in that way, and that's how we're kind of carving out our niche. So it was really focusing on the brand and what and who we represented and giving people a reason to care beyond comic books.
So let me ask you a question. Are you a sports fan?
No.
No. Well, the question is not going to do any good then.
Okay.
A lot hinged on that initial answer.
Right.
Moving on. Leo, you got anything?
I heard a quick movement. No, I wanted to mention Jermaine Design on Twitter. You know the homie with the Superman.
Oh yeah, Jermaine. Dickerson.
Dude, he's bigging you up, Ed. He's all in it. But he had a question, which I feel like has been asked before, and also like I have a question about his question. But he was asking, because we brought up Milestone before, about how will Milestone's return change the industry and or DC's company structure? Is that going to result in more diverse editors and or books? And it's interesting because like I feel like part of this is like what we were talking about, like with Black Panther. It's like, is Black Panther going to stimulate that kind of content? But also I was like, wait, is Milestone legit DC? Like, is that Milestone returning is going to be part of DC or not?
No, it's under the DC umbrella.
It's going to be DC. Okay, I didn't remember that.
But it's also a separate universe within.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
They do separate it.
Yeah. Right. It's going to stay the Dakotaverse. Maybe Superman will come in one time and like save a black lady. It'll be fine.
Is it still the Dakotaverse? Because I remember them marketing it as Earth-M.
Earth-M, yeah, yeah. That's
what I understand. Oh, right. No, it's all coming back to me. It's just been so long since they announced it. Okay, Shade. But yeah, no.
And they did kind of do a re-announcement, you know, at New York Comic Con, which is making me hopeful that it's actually popping off now.
I don't know. I'm excited that Milestone's coming back. I am thrilled, actually.
I think
for all the obvious reasons,
except for Marvel.
I think it's just another opportunity for people to independence to get back out there. You know, it's going to open. I mean, they can't produce content 24/7. You know, somebody's going to have to fill in the gaps in between. And while everybody's hungry for the content, that's where you have the opportunity to step up and step in and fill those gaps. I think that's where the value is for independence. I'm not necessarily sure about Marvel and DC. I just feel like if you haven't gotten it right now, I'm not necessarily waiting on you to get it right in the future. But I think, you know, folks like Lion Forge, folks like Roy and folks, you know, there's so many good properties out there. There's so many quality projects happening right now. The opportunity is very, very high. Again, it goes into marketing, goes into branding and getting your things in front of people. But I think Milestones is going to, what's the phrase? Shake up the volcano just a little bit here. Not a little bit, in a pretty big way, to be quite honest, because it's 20-some years. You know, we haven't seen these characters in...
Has it been that long?
Over 2 decades now.
Mm-hmm. Man, I feel old.
Yeah. So it's something to get excited about, and I think it's a prime time. 2018 is a prime time for a lot of independents to get their stuff together.
And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, we alluded to it earlier, but I think independents have been really... leading the game. And you know, I mean, I definitely just even listening to you and your, you know, keen eye for marketing and, you know, business strategy, I think that that's what's going to really take it to the next level. Because, you know, the creative ability is there and the talent is there. But I think just being able to see the business side of it is super important.
Well, no, we're rooting for you, man. I mean, I appreciate it. I think it's a quality product, man. I think, you know, again, I said that Marcus talked about, you know, the art, and he's an artist, so he knows about that better than I do. I thought the art was dope. I thought that the dialogue and the monologue and the panels and where everything set up and the mythology and the history. Man, this is probably one of my favorite joints right now, to be honest with you.
I appreciate that. I can't take all the credit. You know, I'm the visionary.
That's why you're here, to take all the credit, right?
No, I got to get some of that back. You know, a lot of that back to the team I've been able to put together. I mean, those guys are phenomenal. I'm praying that we get some women on board in 2018. I've been asking two of my friends to come on for about 3 years now. They're nervous, but you know, the
in team, what capacity? I mean,
writers. I actually, you know what? Everybody, I say this all the time. Everybody's a writer. At every mini issue that you see, has been penned by somebody on the team. I mean, everybody has an opportunity to write. And I feel like, to me, I like to nurture talent and I like to nurture people.
Because Leo's a writer.
I've been exposed.
It got awkward.
Got me off guard.
He said it so violently. Like, right. I think Ed like ducked, like, you know. Like,
I just believe in
giving
everybody an opportunity to. I think everybody's able to tell a story. It's just the skill level just varies from time to time, and that's what I like to bring out in everybody that I bring on. Everybody is a storyteller, from our artists to community managers. You know, I give everybody the opportunity to write if they have a heart's desire to write. And all the work that you see, that I wrote issue zero, and I wrote several of the mini issues, but not all the inner mini issues actually come from me. Brent Lyles wrote the Solace mini issue. Tim Wozni wrote the two Apex issue. You know, so it's a varying amount of people behind what you see, and it's just encouraging people to continue to learn and study the art of storytelling and its approach, and understanding storytelling from an Arclight perspective, how we decided to tell stories and what we're doing with our characters and things like that. I mean, we're doing right now, what we're doing is we're compiling documentation and processes on for Arclight. Like, how do you, if you want to create a new character that's outside of your cultural scope or whatever, this is how you actually do your due diligence and you research these group of people. Like with Solace, I remember we brought him up off air. Brent is the creator of Solace. And when he brought the idea to me, I remember telling him, you know, that's all fine and good, but I don't want the focus of this character to be that he's in a wheelchair. We have to expand on that. We have to give him a world to live in, supporting characters to function with him.
So let me ask you about that character.
What's up?
Why that character? Why the wheelchair? What was your research in? And is it personal? Is it just a way?
I'll actually get into that.
Okay, my bad. Go ahead.
No, you're good. So Brent, actually, his brother, he has, hopefully I get this right, cerebral palsy. So he's been wheelchair bound for life, and that's been his world through his older brother. He's gone through what that experience is through him. And one of his role models is Nick Wojcik. I don't know if you guys heard of him. He's actually a motivational speaker who has tetraamelia syndrome, no arms and legs. And he took those two inspirations. And Brent also deals with, he's very vocal about this, mental illness, mental health, and things like that. And it was a culmination of his brother's story, his story, and Nick Wojcik's story. And what he really wanted to do and what he really wanted to see was an authentic, character that actually represented those with a disability. And saw this, he's able, he has telekinetic abilities. We call it situational telekinesis. One of the things we found was that with disabled characters, I forget what the terminology was, but a lot of people had an issue with disabled characters getting these magical arms and these magical legs and giving them the ability to be able-bodied, taking away their disability. And we weren't all the way in tune with that. That took some research on Twitter and some research coming from Brent as well.
No, there's been an outcry against that.
Yeah, right. I think what a pinnacle moment for the creation of that character was deciding that because he's able to form telekinetic objects, wheel them into existence almost like a Green Lantern. I think one of the things there was to make sure that we didn't give him the ability to form arms and legs at will. We call it situational telekinesis because depending on the situation, the telekinesis will react for him. It's almost like a symbiote. Where if there's a moment where people are like it's raining debris down from a skyscraper, the telekinesis may form a shield or a force field around those people, or the situation may call for Solace to grow wings and fly people away, whatever the case is. We didn't want to give him the ability to will into existence arms or legs. We wanted to be able to say, hey, this man has no arms, no legs. However, he's still able to step out on the front line and make a difference. You know, even in his lack of, he still matters
tremendously to this team. And we wanted to build a disabled character that was able to be on the front lines and have as much gravitas and agency as the rest of the able-bodied characters. That was a huge concern for me, and it was a huge concern for Brent as well. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it did because I think what I've found online and from doing this, you know, for a while is that a lot of people will see what's hot and they'll throw it in their comic book, whether it's mm-hmm. okay, we want like a black woman in our comic book because that's hot. Mm-hmm. They won't have any black women writers, right?
Right.
They'll just have their character in there. And they'll want now, you know, the disabled thing is kind of hot right now. And mm-hmm. you know, and they'll be like, okay, so let's throw somebody with a disability in there. They won't have anybody that has any type of connection to that community. Mm-hmm. And they do very little research. And so when it hits, you see a lot of blowback and mm-hmm. people are like, well, we tried. And I'm like, no, you didn't try. You tried to take advantage. And there's a difference. And so I'm glad to hear that there's been some authenticity with, you know, your character and how he came about. So
of course, it's Arclight. Yeah.
My bad. I forgot who I was talking to.
That's right.
So
But no, definitely. And I mean, I think, and if I'm not mistaken, I think on your website, Ed, you had, you know, a little information about the background and the, you know, the due diligence that you had done, that your team had done in creating that character.
Yeah. Solace was about a year and some change in development. It took us a while to find that balance and make sure that we put out a character that was more than we don't want you just to always see the wheelchair. We want you to see Noah Novak. We want you to see this man's struggles, his world, what he enjoys to do, you know, his love life. We focus on building people versus characters. I know that may sound kind of funny, but we really put a lot of effort. I mean, even our latest character, not latest, but he's been around for a while, Riot. We recently switched him from Samoan to Maori because we found out that the Haka chant and the dance was more associated with Maori people than it was Samoan people.
So you're getting technical now.
Right. And we've been doing Spencer has connections to some of his family that's Polynesian. And we've been doing a lot of research. I mean, I've been talking with some people on Twitter who are Maori and asking different cultural questions and things like that. I mean, we don't always get it right, but we do our best to be sensitive to other people's cultures and make sure we're representing it in the right way so that we're not doing what you said that, you know, other people are doing is finding out what's hot and then throwing it into a comic and hoping for the best. No, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. And actually, Spencer's actually been writing out the documentation, the process of due diligence and how that's handled at ArcLight, what you should do, what we want you to come back with after you find your research, what's appropriate, what isn't appropriate. We're documenting what that process looks like. So we're actually putting out characters that are consistently authentic each and every single time.
That's dope. That's dope.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we're heading into the latter part of the show, but as we wind up, I know you have mentioned, in the green room, I'm not sure if you mentioned on air, but you've, you know, recently made the jump, Ed, to, you know, just being, doing this full time. And, what, if anything, would you give as advice to other creators? 'Cause obviously that's not just a leap that you take, you know, without preparation. Right. But what advice would you give to myself and to other creators who are looking to make that jump?
I think the most important thing to understand is that it's not a glamorous jump. Like Gary Vee said this a lot. Entrepreneurship is the hot thing right now to do. It's almost it's trendy. You know, people make it look good and all this other stuff, but in reality, it can actually be a bit scary because, as I said in the green room, you don't have that safety net. You don't get a paycheck every 2 weeks coming in. Like when you're used to that paycheck coming in, you can spend down your money and do whatever you kind of sort of want to do because you know that next check is coming through. But when you jump out there, that's not the case. Sometimes the checks don't come for another 4 weeks or 6 weeks or, you know, whatever the case is. Sometimes you got to go on government support. you know, to make sure that you're eating or whatever. But I think the most important thing is to believe in what you're doing 120%. If you do not believe and have faith in the thing that you've created, don't even bother. Stick with your 9 to 5 and make your thing what you're doing a hobby. Because this is actually a it's real out here. It's a struggle each and every single day. I wake up every day and it's on me to put money in my account. And I have to figure out ways to do that. I have to figure out on this how I'm going to spend each second of every day, each hour every day, what I'm going to. I can't watch everything on TV. I can't go out all the time. I can't drink all the time. I can't do everything that everybody else is doing because you have that safety net. I have to work 10 to 12 hours a day to get things going. And if you can't cut things off, if you don't know how to sacrifice, if you don't know how to give things up right now for a better future, for your goals and your dreams, again, stay at your 9 to 5 because it's not going to be for you at all. You have to wake up every single day with the mentality that you got to hustle, that you have to grind, that you have to go out there and get it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen for you. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but it's the truth. This is coming from someone who just did it in May, you know, completely quit, moved down to Atlanta. Like I came down to Atlanta that weekend, went back to North Carolina, told my job, I'm out in 3 weeks, turned everything around and came right back down here. And I'm still down here right now. But, you know, it's a huge jump. And if you're young, if you aren't married, if you don't have kids, the jump is easier. But when you have those things, it takes a little more consideration. You have to plan things out a little better. So for those of you who are in that category of being single or whatever, without no kids and this, that, and the other, if you're waiting for the right moment to make that jump, there's no other perfect time than now. But do it with caution and do it with care. You know, have something in your account, have some type of padding, some type of cushion to catch you from those days when the checks stop coming. But it's a game of life and death out here. I don't want to be extreme about it, but I want to paint an authentic picture of what that looks like for people. This isn't as glamorous as social media makes it out to be.
Yeah, no, definitely. I want to real quick, we have a statement and a question from, you know, a friend of the show, Onyenya Yo of Carbon Fiber Media. But she was you know, said that she appreciates your thoughtfulness in developing your character with the wheelchair. She said she missed the name and the title, which is, you know, the character she's speaking about is Silas. But yeah, I just want to clarify that, you know, for her. And so we'll definitely be seeing more of Silas in the absolutely. First issue that you're working on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Maybe not in book one, because there's several characters we have to dole out over time. Right. I originally wanted to throw them all in the same book, but it proved to be more beneficial to slowly roll them out so you get a feel for each one. We don't want to just introduce them all at the same time. We want you to understand who Braxton is and understand who Riot is and Solace is. So they'll be doled out over time throughout the different graphic novels in this volume. But you will see Solace in that first collection of books. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. And actually, while I'm on the subject of Onyena and Carbon Fiber, I definitely want to big up the an exhibit that's coming up on November 4th. It starts on November 4th, and it's at the Medallia Gallery, Space One, on West 38th Street in New York. So if you're in the New York area, definitely check it out. The show is called Aim, Destroy, Transform, Play for Change. And, you know, it just features work from toy makers and people who make games and figures. And there's a definite, you know, social commentary element to the work. So definitely in line with what we're talking about and what ArcLight is doing. But yeah, definitely check the show out. That's Aim, Destroy, Transform, Play for Change. And just follow Carbon Fiber Media, follow the Ether, you know, online, and you'll find more information about it. We tweeted the information out tonight as well, but definitely stay tuned for that. Oh, and actually one other announcement real quick. It's the we have 4 days left in the Kickstarter campaign for It's Not Another Were Spider by Greg Anderson. And you know, we haven't gotten to speak about it recently because we've been kind of on and off with the episodes, but definitely check it out. It's a dope campaign. I'm getting on there and backing it tonight. So definitely support that book because it's yet another case of, like, you know, seeing the change that we want to, supporting the change that we want to see. So definitely check that out. But yeah, so Ed, being that we're nearing the 2 hour mark, I'm going to, you know, hit you with our question that we usually like to close with people. It's a more recent question that we've started asking our guests. I think you're around the same age. So my question to you is, do you have a favorite Transformer and why?
You know, I never really got into Transformers.
Okay. You're the second person that said that recently.
Never really got. Now we're talking about Power Rangers, and we can go in on that.
Okay, all right. What's your favorite Power Ranger? We can roll with that.
Of course, the Black Ranger.
All right. Well, yeah. I don't even need an explanation. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're familiar with my story on Twitter, you'll know that that was the first time I actually saw a black guy being a superhero. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever saw that. You could pretty much standard was a sidekick or a villain or whatever. And that was like the first time I've ever seen something like that. And that really kind of propelled my interest at that young of an age. And I mean, till this day, I actually still have all my original Power Ranger toys from the 90s. I have been a Power Rangers fan all my life. I actually recently just took a picture with Walter Jones at Dragon Con this year, which was super dope. But yeah, so it Power Rangers pretty much changed my life in the same way Milestone did.
Yeah, no, that's what's up. And I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what it is, because, you know, regardless of medium, whether it's film, you know, comics or television or novels, you know, it's the things that really impact you and that you feel on another level, that, you know, because entertainment is everywhere, you know.
Right.
I do feel that these stories do have an ability to entertain you and to, you know, to transcend.
Absolutely.
Their effect. So, yeah, man. No, props to you, and just, you know, thank you for everything you're doing. And we'll definitely be speaking with you again as Arc Light's story evolves.
I appreciate y'all. Thank y'all so much.
No doubt. Yo, Thelonious, you awake, man?
Yeah, man. I'm afraid of the church pinch, so I've been keeping quiet.
Oh man, come on, nah. It's just, you know, the church pinch is just a threat, man. You know.
Yeah, well, you know, threat doesn't work if there's no follow through. So yeah, I was like, he might not be playing this time. Hey, bro, man, it's been dope, man. Big fan, man. Looking forward to big things. Hopefully we get you up at Universal Fan Con. You know, definitely want to meet you. Absolutely. In person, man. Get you to ask some questions in person on camera or whatever, man. I think it's going to be dope, and much love and best of luck to you.
I appreciate that. Thank y'all so much.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Actually, wait, real quick, from the audience, Countess DY chimed in to let us know that Jazz was her favorite Transformer. I'm with you, definitely. You know, also, incidentally, Jazz was the first Transformer toy I had. So, you know, I had to get that because, you know, he was the brother. And actually, Tony Snark asked, he said he's waiting for someone to say that they're not into Transformers because they love the GoBots. So
I don't even know what that is.
you're fine. You're okay. You know what? Look, just Google it. Just Google it. GoBots was like the biggest knockoff. And whereas the Transformers kind of had these, you know, their designs were cool. Like, even if you weren't into them, they had cool designs, and, like, you know, they put some thought into how they came together. Mm-hmm. GoBots, man, they just were like big blocks. You know what I mean? They didn't even try to really turn them into a robot that looked functional. So anyway, yeah, I'm also waiting on that, Tony. We'll see. One of these days, we'll get a diehard GoBot fan, and we'll figure out what makes them tick. But yeah. All right, y'all. Thank you to the audience, man. Shout out to Shannon, Arcade Noise, Tony, Jermaine, you know, Onyena. I don't want to leave anybody out. Definitely shout out to Second City Chronicle. Just everybody, man. Shout out to everybody. If I missed you, it's, you know, blame the mind, not the heart. And Black Comics Chat will definitely be back. We'll be back next week, a week from today. So yeah, check us out.
All right, peace, fam.
All right, y'all.
Black Comics Chat.